was why!
Everybody, and welcome to episode 43 of the Ron and Brian podcast. I am Ron, as always, joined by the winner of the 2014 AVN Award for Best Boobs, Brian. Brian, how we doing today?
Honestly, I mean, I was doing okay until this—you just brought it up, but I really do miss my my fun bags. I mean, you know. It was a career decision. It was something that I thought was going to, you know, help elevate me professionally to the next level. It did for a few years until, you know, I started to have the physical side effects that the doctors had warned me about. I mean, they did say that the human skin was not supposed to stretch to the level that I was pushing it. The elasticity has never returned. And frankly, I'm afraid to take my T-shirt off in public. So once again, Ron, thank you for bringing up a bad memory.
I mean, and if we can just maybe clarify a bit, I had heard a rumor that the reason you had won this award was due to the fact that you were pretty much the hands-on favorite for best double penetration in 2013, did not win that award in a stunning upset. People felt you were given the best boobs as kind of the following year. Your thoughts on that?
I was being compared to Susan Lucci for the Daytime Emmy. I was being compared to Glenn Close for the Oscars, you know, where it was always the bridesmaid, never the bride. I believe that the judges on the selection committee finally felt that this was my time to shine.
Were you being considered almost like the vodka gimlet? Nice segue. You like that segue there, don't you?
Nice segue.
So finally, after a number of losses, how many losses? Four, five?
Easily five. I think it lost two, and then we came back and knocked and just basically committed it every week until it was going to win.
So finally, going up against the vodka tonic, which I think people thought maybe was too boring of a drink. So vodka gimlet finally wins. We've got our drink of the week here. Let's have a little sip.
Let me know what your mixture was, because I was not satisfied with mine.
So I've got 2 ounces of vodka. I went with Tito's Homemade because I go U.S. unlike some of us that have sold out to Russia. And I went with 2 tablespoons of Rose's sweetened lime syrup.
Oh, okay. What I did was I went 2.5 ounces of vodka with 1/2 ounce of lime juice and 1/2 ounce of simple syrup.
Mm. Interesting.
Like to point out, I'm getting quite good at making simple syrup. Not saying that I'm ready to open up my own restaurant, but I'm getting very handy in the kitchen. What I was not happy with is I barely tasted the lime juice. So I went back and had to put more in. I felt like I was just drinking pure Vodak straight from Smirnoff Chechnya.
So you can definitely taste the lime in my drink. In fact, I would argue maybe you can almost taste too much lime, but it's still not bad.
No, it's to me, this is probably more of a summer drink.
I would agree with that.
I believe that what did we have where it was the apple cider with whiskey? What was that drink?
I don't remember what the name of that one was. It was like the anal cinnamon toss, was it? I'm not sure if that was
whatever it was. What did we have at the Broken Goblet beer festival where I became enamored with the spiked apple cider, and that pretty much led me down to a quick steep decline, not down the hill into plants that had been planted, but into a steep decline of debauchery.
Well, there was whiskey in that apple heated apple
so
cider,
good.
So it was quite tasty.
And I remember we brought it back as one of the drinks of the week, and I was very happy that it won. So congratulations to the vodka gimlet. You have officially been retired. Your jersey has been hung up to the rafters. May we never have to see your name listed again. And I'd like to say to the listeners right now, go to our Twitter page, go to our Facebook page, go to our Instagram, reach out to us by email, go to our website, fill out in the comment section, make a recommendation for a drink of the week. I feel like we've been carrying a little bit of, you know, we're bringing you 1 hour of free entertainment every week. All we ask is that you give us a couple drinks that don't involve elderflower. And I think it's not asking too much of you. I believe that, you know, there needs to be a two-way line of providing of goods and services. We provide you the service of ear candy, of entertainment, of information, infotainment, if you would. I'd like to consider us an infotainment service.
Sure.
All I ask is that if you're listening, reach out to us, make a couple recommendations of drinks you like to make at home, and you would like to hear what we think of it, because we will drink whatever it is that you tell us to drink.
And, you know, also, like all great relationships, they're a two-way street. So we've been going down this one-way street. We're just asking you to come back up our alleyway and give us some drink suggestions.
Preferably go the back way if you're going to be going in our alleyway.
If you need to.
Yes, I'm just throwing it out there.
So I also want to apologize for my wheezing, which I'm sure most people can hear. Might be coming down with a bit of a cold, but I'm alternating my vodka gimlet with a little coffee. So, and we got a new Keurig, which I know pains you to no end, Brian.
Why would you get a Keurig?
You know, Susan had these points from work, so she was able to cash them in for this Keurig with that does the milk frothing and everything else. It's very fancy.
If you put milk froth on a steaming pile of turd, you're still going to taste the turd. Yes, it will be creamier. Yes, frothier. Maybe you'll feel a little bit more aristocratic while chewing on dung, but I'm telling you something, your breath is still going to stink afterwards.
Fair enough. All right. Well, let's move on. As always, we've got This Week in Racism.
This
week
in
Racism.
Racism.
You know, I feel like with the throat thing, going from the gimlet to the coffee, hot to cold, isn't that what they recommend? Put a little cold on it, put a little heat on
yes.
it. So
yes.
I feel I'm doing everything I need to do. So let's go through This Week in Racism. Winning again this week, Julie Edwards pitching another shutout, picking up her second win, knocking off Ashley Rose. Brian, you called this last week. You said Julie just brought so much racism and so much hatred in her initial recording that Ashley couldn't stand up to her. You proved yourself right. You're a prognosticator. You're a Jimmy the Greek.
Well, I would prefer not to have the same sunset period of my career that Jimmy the Greek had.
Really? You had an issue with that?
The way he got taken down?
You have often commented on how you feel blacks can't swim.
What?
Or was that somebody else?
I believe you're thinking of your crazy uncle, Harvey.
Or maybe it was Cousin Jimmy. Who knows?
Yeah, quite possibly.
But anyway,
maybe
Julie's
it was Uncle Freddie. Maybe it was your other uncle, Uncle Freddie. He could have been.
So anyway, we've got a few contenders that we were looking at this week. Not a lot of viral racism, but we did find some people to go up against Julie Edwards over in Loudoun County, Virginia. Students at Madison's Trust Elementary School were made to participate in an activity where they pretended they were runaway slaves. Three teachers apparently crafted the activity with the oversight of a school administrator. Keeping in the southern school districts, the Rock Hill School District in South Carolina, students at the Carroll School were taken on a field trip where they picked cotton and sang slave songs, even though the point of the trip was to educate students on the Great Depression and wasn't a lesson on slavery or Black History Month. Going over to Texas, a man verbally assailed a woman for speaking Spanish with her mother at a Cracker Barrel restaurant. Out to the West Coast in San Diego, California, the 3rd Marine Air Wing has launched an investigation after a post showing two Miramar-based Marines in blackface started circulating on social media. One of the soldiers involved, Zach Highfield, posted the video on his Snapchat that showed the two Marines wearing black charcoal masks while one utters a racial epithet. But our contender this week, and shockingly enough, Brian, no one from Florida this week. I think this may be the first time in history we had no racists from Florida in This Week in Racism. So kudos,
you didn't
Florida.
You didn't just say Miramar?
That was in California.
Miramar, California. Okay.
Apparently in San Diego area. But our contender this week, we're going to Maryland, specifically Maryland Democrat Mary Ann Lasanti, who apologized to the state's legislative Black caucus for referring to Prince George's County as a, quote, N-word district. Prince George's County is 65% African American. Lasanti stated that she did not remember using the word, but also mentioned that she did not remember much of the night in question. She reportedly used the word in front of a racially mixed group of lawmakers while having a few drinks at an Annapolis, Maryland cigar bar. Asked whether she had ever used the slur before, the second-term lawmaker said, "I'm sure I have. I'm sure everyone has used it. I've used the F-word. I use the Lord's name in vain." Despite her apology, many are asking for her to resign. While she hasn't at this point, she did step down as the chair of the Unemployment Insurance Subcommittee on the House Economic Matters Committee.
All right.
Well, I can't think of a more worthless subcommittee to be on than the Unemployment Insurance, so a very hollow gesture. So we'll see if she manages to ride this out and not resign. But at the very least, she's going to have to go up against Julie Edwards and see if she can knock off our two-time winner. Julie Edwards obviously looking for win number three, looking to run the gamut, retire after four wins, get that number one seed. So you guys just need to head over to our Facebook page. We'll have the poll up there. You can cast your vote and let us know who the worst of the worst is. Brian, any comments on this week's racist?
You know, it's I think that one of the recurring themes that that we've seen over the past 43 episodes in the reincarnation of the Ron and Brian show is government workers using unabashed racism as part of their standard operating life. And that's the part that I think is that I'm walking away from being the most shocking.
All right. Moving on, we've got ourselves, of course, it's time for Beef of the Week.
Ron and Brian's Beef of the Week.
Brian, what do you got this week? Talk to me.
All right, make your own salads.
Really? How is that a beef of yours?
I will tell you exactly how is a beef of mine. Because people, first off, I do enjoy make your own salad.
Now, let me clarify this. Is this something that you do at home, or is it at a restaurant or a fast food place?
This is one of those when you're going out for lunch.
Okay.
And, you know, it's, you know, where they've got the soup in one area, they got the sandwiches over there, and then they have the make your own salad section.
I got you now.
And my issue is that there is a combination which provides a perfect storm shit show at lunchtime, which is this. One, they have too many options. There's five different types of lettuce, nine different types of cheese. You have olives, cucumbers, carrots, corn. There's like eight different types of chicken, and part two, and this is where it really frustrates me, is that the people in line act like they've never seen these options before. It's the same freaking choices day in, day out, and they stand there and go, can I have romaine? And then the guy puts the romaine in the bowl. And can I have the grilled chicken? Is that grilled chicken? Is that grilled chicken? Of course it's grilled chicken. It's grilled chicken every freaking day. Then they go for the cheese. It takes for fucking... I've never seen anybody order chickpeas. Every day it's taking up one of the slots. Not once have I heard. And now the new thing, and this is, I don't know if it's a New York health conscious thing, or, but now you can put chia seeds on top.
Ooh.
I'm sorry, but chia, I hear the word chia, I'm thinking you pour water and hair is going to grow out of a bust of Ronald Reagan. I don't know when that became edible, but yeah, make your own salads. a shit show as a lunch choice.
All right. My beef this week is actually with the Oscars, which were on this past Sunday night. Here's my beef with the Oscars. Something you may not know about me, Brian, but I am a film aficionado. I love films. I love the art of film. I love movies in general. And so I'm fine with the celebration of it, but they throw so much crap into this show to make it run like three and a half hours. Like, I like hearing the speeches. I like hearing from some of the people that don't get recognition in front of the camera. They talk about, you know, their way through the industry and really set an example. But then you offset it with like stupid bits that go on in between. You know, I don't know that we necessarily need to hear each and every song that is nominated for Song of the Year, because Lord knows most of them have been played to death on the radio by the time it gets to the Oscars. Although I did enjoy watching Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper pretty much almost bang on the Oscars stage doing that version of Shallow.
Was it as awkward as people are talking about?
I mean, I would imagine it was awkward for Bradley Cooper's girlfriend there in the front row, but
he has a girlfriend?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And she was literally just sitting there in the front row while these two are like all over themselves singing this song. And I get it. Like, I saw A Star Is Born. The song, you know, is definitely an integral part of the movie. And, you know, were they filming the movie still, you know, that would be understandable. But so now everybody wants Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga to hook up. I'm referring to the new couple as Koopka. You can decide if you want to try and get that going or not. But again, if we could just shrink it down, don't need the nonsense. Don't need who's the one actress there that came out? Melissa McCarthy came out in some stupid costume to give like the costume awards. It's too much. Right. It's too much nonsense. Much better without a host, but still too much nonsense. And Billy Porter slayed on the red carpet with that tuxedo gown he had.
Oh, whoa. Slayed. Made a mockery of fashion?
No, fierce.
How? Where did you and I go so incredibly wrong?
Did you not see the picture of him?
I did see a picture of him.
Daring, you know, an homage to a fashion designer that he was close to, considered a mentor. I wish I could carry myself in a tuxedo gown like that.
All right, who's the dude that was wearing that? Because I don't know who he is.
That was Billy Porter, I believe.
I know, you said, but who is he?
Who is he? He is someone that apparently, from what I read online, serves up looks.
But that is, so he's a model?
He is he's a stage performer. He's a pop singer. He's an actor.
Jussie Smollett is a pop singer as well, but I mean, that doesn't mean I'm going to go out and buy his album.
I mean, I guess probably, you know, what people might know him the best for is he won a Tony for Best Actor in a Musical for Kinky Boots back in 2013.
Okay.
Does not appear to have an AVN to his credit, so I think you're a little bit ahead of him there. But yeah, he's kind of a triple threat. He sings, he dances, he acts, and he slays on the red carpet.
Okay.
Don't at me. I will stand firm in my assertion of this.
All right. I think he looked like he was dressed as a character from Gone with the Wind.
I mean, I think he might even take that as a compliment.
Quite possibly. Maybe, you know what? I just think maybe, and I'm not judging, but maybe our sense of fashion might be a little different.
It's possible. Just when I think you're on the same level of bougie as I am, you say something like this and you just ruin it.
Oh, no. We're the opposite of bougie. In different areas.
True.
I mean, I don't understand fashion. I'm not a connoisseur of movies, of high-end artsy movies. I know you love anything that's black and white and in German. But when it comes to coffee, you're drinking dung water.
Ooh. All right.
And here's where I'm going to insult you. You're making your wife drink it too.
She is all about the K-cup. So I would argue that she started the revolution in our household.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway, those are our beefs. Moving on. Obviously, we have to talk about the biggest thing to hit the news today. The number one topic on everyone's lips. Yes, Guy Fieri is opening a chicken finger chain with 22 dipping sauces. Count them, Brian. 22.
Do we have a list of what they are?
All right, I was hoping you would ask that. The 22 sauces are, not in any particular order, special sauce, of course, donkey sauce. Well,
now, what is that? Is special sauce the stuff he uses in his hair to make it become golden yellow and spike up?
It's possible. Donkey sauce, which I know is a Guy Fieri thing at some of his other restaurants.
Because one time when I was in college,
yes.
I was going to bed early, and I couldn't find my lotion. So I spit into my hand, and I whipped up some donkey sauce. And it got really weird, because next thing I knew, it was all over my pillow. My roommate walked into the room. My face got red. It was really embarrassing.
Well, that's just two so far, Brian. We've got 20 more to go. Ranchero, all right. Curry mayo, wasabi honey, cumin, lime mojo, garlic parmesan, avocado crema, bourbon brown sugar, buffalo, blue cheese, buttermilk ranch, lemon pepper, honey mustard, teriyaki, sweet and sour, chipotle ranch, Nashville hot honey, peri peri, habanero hot sauce, spicy mayo, and of course, sweet sriracha barbecue. For those chicken finger lovers out there, you have a right to be excited right now.
Okay.
But of course, the actual big topic today, Michael Cohen's testimony in front of the House of Representatives, in front of the Oversight Committee. I believe it's actually still going on. If not, it may just be wrapping up. But he's been going on since about 9:30 this morning. I know they took a dinner break. There's been some additional testimony today. Brian, did you catch any of it so far?
I did not watch any of the actual video. What I did do was I read the transcript of his opening statement, and it reminded me a lot of the time when you and I went up in front of the executive council at WCDB, and they said to me, Brian, what do you think of Ron as a potential partner for your talk show? And I said, the problem with Ron is this. He is a racist, he is a con man, and he is a cheat.
And they managed to overlook all that.
And then I said that I was ashamed that I had chose to take part in concealing your antics, your illicit antics, rather than listening to my own conscience. And that was the part that really upset me. Then I took out some receipts and I passed them around. Oddly, nobody seemed interested.
No, not at all. And here we are 25 years later, still working together. So it couldn't have harmed your conscience all that much.
Explosive Michael Cohen today. I think this was testimony that we have been waiting for since he agreed to a plea bargain with the special counselor, Robert Mueller. We knew that he was part of Donald Trump's inner circle. We knew that he knew secrets that nobody was supposed to know. We know that he is a flaming asshole because of the way he treated Stormy Daniels, the way he was tweeting out at Hillary Clinton. So let's face it, this man is not a Boy Scout.
No.
However, he showed up today with the goods.
He showed up ready to fight. It was a very contentious audience, at least on the Republican side. Again, just a lot of political theater, most of it coming from the ranking member on the Democratic side, Representative Elijah Cummings, and the ranking member on the Republican side, Representative Jim Jordan, both being incredibly over the top. Most of the Republicans taking the opportunity to take shots at Michael Cohen, remind America that Michael Cohen is going to prison for lying to Congress, so why should we trust him now? Basically constantly trying to demean Michael Cohen's character. Never once did any Republican today ask a question of Michael Cohen regarding any potential crimes or illegal activities by Donald Trump, whereas the Democrats were just more than happy to just ask very basic questions and allow Michael Cohen to kind of go on for 6 or 7 minutes at a time. You know, I don't know what is going to come out of this. You know, I don't know that we necessarily learned anything new. A lot of the comments that Michael Cohen made, I would say, would be tough to substantiate in a court of law. I mean, he did have, like you said, he did have some receipts. He had two cash checks from Donald J. Trump's personal account for $35,000 each.
But what does the check doesn't show anything other than Donald Trump paid him.
Exactly. So
like it felt like the he had a lot to say, but really when you boil it down, there's no smoking gun there.
A lot of
this is the way he operates. He doesn't just come out and obviously state things. He implies I don't think I learned anything new about the inner workings of the Trump campaign than what I had already picked up on.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think there was too much that was new. I was, before we started recording tonight, I did catch some of additional testimony when Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was questioning him. And her line of questioning was very specific, obviously looking to elicit answers from Michael Cohen to set up a tax evasion charge, regarding, President Trump's personal finances versus what his tax returns might show, the devaluing of some of his properties to get lower tax bills. She mentioned his golf course in Jupiter, Florida, which on his personal financial statement he listed as a value of $50 million. But when it came time to report the value of the golf club to the tax assessor's office, he listed it as $5 million. So, she asked along each step of the way, who else could corroborate these stories? And each time, Michael Cohen had the names of two or three individuals within the Trump organization that can now be subpoenaed to ask about president's tax dealings on some of these. So while there definitely wasn't an aha moment or a smoking gun, I think, some of these representatives took their time to really try and pull out some information under oath that they can now proceed with additional investigations against the president.
Right.
Some of the other things that were pointed out today is that it would appear that prosecutors are looking into an unnamed criminal matter involving Donald Trump.
Saw that.
When Cohen was asked about the last time he talked to someone working for Trump, he said he couldn't talk about it because it's being investigated by the Southern District of New York. So couldn't talk about that. As you mentioned, we've got the two canceled checks, and Cohen is stating that Trump talked with him during a meeting in the Oval Office about reimbursement for hush money he paid to Stormy Daniels. Could it be that this is enough evidence to indict Donald Trump? Probably not. I mean, he's essentially an unindicted co-conspirator in a federal case so far. But the fact that these checks have been produced and, Cohen has named names of other individuals that were supposedly in the Oval Office, this could put Trump in legal jeopardy once he leaves office.
Right. Well, I mean, I've written you personal checks. And I mean, you and I both know that was for services rendered.
Of course.
I mean, you could take the copies of those checks and then sit there and say that it was because I asked you to kill someone. Maybe I asked you to attack an actor on a popular TV show who was making $65,000 an episode and felt he was about to get written off his show. And I asked you if you could wear a MAGA hat and throw bleach on him.
I think I remember that. It was not a proud moment for you.
No, not at all. Not at all. I would call that rock bottom.
So Cohen also,
but the checks don't actually show
they
anything.
They don't, unfortunately. It's not like you fill in the memo section of the check, cover up an affair. But
right.
It is very interesting the timing. One of the checks was from I believe February of 2017. One was from August of 2017. At that point, Donald Trump was president. Michael Cohen was not handling any dealings for the president at that point. So how does one justify two large payments from a personal bank account to Michael Cohen? It'll be interesting to see what Donald's answer is to that.
Right.
Cohen said that Trump indirectly told him to lie to the public about the Moscow project, and that Trump's lawyers reviewed Cohen's untrue statement to Congress regarding that. Again, he didn't really provide further evidence. You know, he pleaded guilty in federal court to lying to Congress about it. But, you know, again, it's a he said, he said. You know, he also claimed that, you know, he regularly briefed Donald Trump Jr. and Ivanka Trump about the Moscow Tower. Again, no backup there.
Right.
He said that Roger Stone told Trump about the leaked Clinton emails ahead of time. Again, no evidence there. But, you know, Roger Stone already came out and stated that, you know, Michael Cohen was lying, which will be interesting to see what happens there, because he was under a gag order from the judge not to say anything regarding the Mueller investigation. So it'll be interesting to see if she takes his tweet responding to Michael Cohen as breaking that. We'll see if he ends up in jail. He claimed numerous times that Trump routinely lied about the values of his business properties, which we discussed. This, you know, something that we've all kind of thought and discussed is that, you know, Trump ran for president just to build his personal brand and never thought right. he would win. Which, you know, Michael Wolff made that same claim in Fire and Fury.
Exactly. This is not, that's also not news.
And I think, you know, I that's the part I would 100% agree with. I don't believe Donald Trump wants to be president. I can't imagine he's happy as president, especially with all of this attention his finances and everything else is getting. He never thought he would win, and yet he did.
See, I think he does want to be president. I don't think he wanted to be president before he became president, but now I think he realized that everybody's in the world is talking about him. I think he's actually forgotten about making money, and now just has a lust for power.
It's very possible. Although, how pissed must he be when he's over in, you know, over in Vietnam talking to, you know, Kim Jong-sun or whatever that guy's name is. And that basically there was hardly any coverage of that because everything was focused on Michael Cohen today.
From what I heard on the news this morning, he was furious. And everybody is expecting him to rage tomorrow because apparently he's got a meeting with Kim Jong-un today, at which point he's doing a press conference afterwards. And they're expecting that if he does not come out with some type of concrete agreement, not just that that flimsy one pager of memo of understanding that he walked away from last time when they had a summit. But if he does not walk away with something concrete as to definitive steps to thwart North Korea's nuclear drive, he's going to be, excuse you, he is going to literally go on a tirade about Michael Cohen to deflect his poor showing in the summit.
And it's already been announced this evening that the U.S. is expected to step back its call to North Korea to reduce their nuclear campaign. So it seems like he's already failing to make any significant deals over there.
It's the art of the deal.
Going back to Cohen, Cohen said that Trump asked him to threaten his alma maters to prevent them from releasing his personal school records. He also presented a letter to Fordham University threatening them with legal action if his grades were released. A representative of Fordham confirmed that they received a phone call and a letter about Trump's grades. Again, not overly illegal, not overly important. You know, I think it just...
No, but it shows... It shows a certain level of pettiness.
Oh, sure. Well, that
of vanity, just that he can't be seen as anything other than this hyper successful individual.
Right. And he went on to say that, you know, Trump had ordered him to threaten people, you know, roughly 500 times. You know, he showed the letter to Fordham again, backing that up. He also acknowledged a tape recording of him threatening a Daily Beast reporter. He claimed that Donald Trump Jr. told his father about that Trump Tower meeting with a Russian lawyer, but again, doesn't have any evidence for that. This was a good one. To show, again, speaking to the pettiness, is that Trump apparently directed Michael Cohen to pay someone to purchase a portrait of Trump at an auction, spending $60,000, so his portrait would be the highest priced item sold at the event. Trump then paid the fake bidder using money from the charitable Trump Foundation and kept the portrait to himself.
And that's pretty much well known, because when the when his Trump Foundation was filing its paperwork of assets, when it was making its agreement with the New York State to wind down its operations due to multiple acts of fraud, that portrait was one of the very few assets that the foundation had.
Correct. And this would actually be the third known instance of Trump using money from his charity to purchase a portrait of himself at an auction. That's very believable. Trump is apparently racist in private conversations. Again, did not have further evidence, but, I don't know that that's necessarily surprising for him to say that, you know, and I think for me, that was kind of what made this testimony seem like a waste of time in a lot of ways is, you know, a lot of what he stated would just be hearsay in most courts of law, not right. A ton of supporting evidence. It will need other individuals to back up his stories. Were there some nuggets in there that the oversight committee can pick up and run with? We'll see. But again, I don't think this served to change your mind about Donald Trump. If you don't like Donald Trump, if you think he's a con man, if you think he's a racist, if you think he's a horrible individual, you still think that. If you're a fan of Donald Trump, I don't think anything Michael Cohen had to say changed that. So, again, I feel this was more of political theater than anything else.
I'm actually more of the mind that right now nothing could change anybody's mind on something.
It's very difficult to for people to change what they're thinking these days.
That we all have our minds made up on how we believe, and either evidence is in line with what we already believe, or or we decide that somebody's lying.
Can we at least agree upon the fact that Robert Kraft is a creepy old man?
Define creepy.
A man who is worth $6 billion going to a strip mall in Jupiter, Florida to get a rub and tug at a massage parlor.
I would have to say that maybe he felt that that was a good way to maintain anonymity. That if he were to ask a colleague, a friend, a house manager, hey, can you obtain a prostitute for me? That it would sully his reputation. If he were to get in his car and drive down the street and, stop off at the dollar store in the strip mall, then go to Wendy's, and then afterwards go to the massage parlor, maybe, you know, people wouldn't know that it was him.
I mean, I guess that's possible. But, you know, obviously we're talking about the current situation going on where not just Robert Kraft, but a number of individuals have been caught in a massage parlor prostitution sting that was taking place at the Orchids of Asia Day Spa in Jupiter. 10 spas actually were being targeted. That Orchids of Asia Day Spa was actually the one that Robert Kraft went to. Some of the other individuals that have been captured in the sting: John Havens, former president and COO of Citigroup; John Childs, founder of private equity firm JW Childs Associates; a lot of heavy hitters, billionaires, people with lots of money going to strip malls to, I'm not sure that you can
obtain,
even
hold on, maybe they're just going to obtain some relief.
People do want some relief, no question about it.
I mean, maybe you're not always going to have your best friend in the car.
But this, I think for me, what is really troubling to me is the number of people that are making fun of this situation. But when you look at what these men were doing, they were contributing to human trafficking and sex slavery. Because,
all right, I'll hold up. I'm going to stop you right there.
Please.
And I'm going to call you on your bullshit.
Okay.
Because none of these things go after the people that are organizing these raids. They're not going after organized crime that maintain a flow of women that are being held against their will. They're going after the poor girl who happens to be ending up in these massage parlors. They're meant to embarrass people that go to these places. They're not going after the sex traffickers. Those people are as soon as this place gets shut down, they open up another store down the street. They pay off the cops until somebody who doesn't want to be paid off runs an investigation. Once again, this is they're targeting the female victims during these sex trafficking cases, and they're going after the guys that use them.
Well,
they're not going after the people that are really the root of the problem.
Well, I will agree with you to an extent. I agree that.
And did I sound like a guy who read a op-ed piece in the New York Times? Because that's exactly what I did.
It was very, very much like that. I agree that there's a larger issue here. However, not one that the local police can really deal with. That is more of an international situation. But the fact of the matter is, if men were not patronizing these establishments, there would not be a reason to bring these women over. You know, these women
Agreed.
Are over in, you know, over in China, over in Japan. They're being promised, you know, free passage to the United States with the understanding that they'll be set up with jobs, they'll be able to have an apartment, live a life, chase down the American dream. And oh, and they get here and they are basically trapped, kept prisoner in these strip malls, in these day spas, and forced to provide sexual services to whoever comes in, whoever's paying the money. And it's right. not like they're seeing the money at the end of the day. Like they're yeah.
And also they're in many cases, if they don't provide service to a certain quota of men, they're being physically harmed.
Exactly. There is rampant abuse on top of the sexual abuse they have to endure when dealing with these men that come in. Yes, there is physical abuse that occurs if they are not collecting enough tip money, if they are not, you know, if they're not taking care of enough men, if they're taking too long with men versus the amount of money the men is spending. I mean, it's just horrible. And that's why it's like it's ridiculous how much people are kind of joking about this situation, because it's Bob Kraft involved. You know, I've been listening to like Howard Stern the last couple of days, and he's kind of been making fun of it and pretending he's like the Asian girl in the massage parlor having to take care of Bob Kraft. But it's not that funny, because these are women that are being abused and are suffering. And you have a man like a Bob Kraft who is in a position to do something positive based on his stature in the world. And instead, he's just feeding into the issue that's there.
Well, I think it's the idea of it just further goes into the dehumanization of the women that are involved here. It's don't treat them like they're an actual human being that was born, that grew up, had parents, siblings, had dreams, aspirations of life, found themselves in a tough situation. You know, don't treat them like human beings. Just they're the objects in it. But really, what the attention here should be that an American billionaire who owns an NFL franchise wanted to be manually stimulated.
Well, and I think we just have to, I think this maybe just settles the question as to whether the Patriots are a trash organization or not. They clearly are a trash organization run and owned by a man who feels that the laws shouldn't apply to him. They didn't feel that laws should apply when they were filming other teams' practices during Spygate. You know, they didn't feel they needed to follow the rules during the Deflategate situation. He's going to probably be fined again by the NFL, and his lawyers are already stating, "Oh, you know, he's not guilty. We're going to find him not guilty." Again, lawyers speak. They're not going to find him innocent. They're just going to find a way to figure out how to get him found not guilty, and so try and get evidence thrown out or whatever, because he's on videotape. Like, that's the thing that, like, cracks me up, is he literally is on videotape that they had set up cameras in this place twice going to the spa. Video of him receiving sexual services from these women. But again, it's what white, rich, old people do, is they try and game the court system to their advantage. You know, we see it all the time.
When you have enough money to pay for good lawyers, you easily can outshine the prosecuting attorney.
I mean, it's aggravating, because, you know, it would be one thing if you could admit your mistake. I mean, again, at the end of the day, he wouldn't do any jail time. The fine's like $500. So maybe own up to what you've done versus trying to be a complete dick about it.
Well, he's going to be a complete dick about it. It's because he's a dick. I mean, that's what he does.
And of course, who was the first person waiting for him when his plane landed back in New England? Tom Brady, wearing his Uggs.
Did he give him,
a big kiss
hug on the cheek?
Oh, no.
Kiss on the lips?
He kisses right on the lips. That's what. That's the kind of man Tom Brady is.
That's gross.
And he's still...
That's gross. It's gross, Jerry.
And he's still dating that 39-year-old actress. So we shall...
Oh, my God. Can you imagine the size diamond ring he's buying her right now not to dump his ass?
So I always use the frame of reference as the that diamond ring that Kobe Bryant bought his wife during his trial.
Of course.
Bigger or smaller than the Kobe purple diamond?
Oh, I think it's got to be smaller.
Really?
Kobe was married. Kobe had kids. And Kobe was also charged with rape, like forcible rape. And I just did the exact same thing of people that I was just bitching about. I just said that what was taking place with Robert Kraft was not considered, shouldn't be considered rape. But most of these women are doing this against their free will.
Exactly.
So it is
rape. It is. You've managed to convince yourself.
I just convinced myself
otherwise. You talked yourself into it.
See, and we go back earlier just to make this full circle. It is possible to change your mind when presented with facts in today's day and age. We there's still hope for humanity.
Brian, that not everybody is as woke as you are.
Oh, so woke. So woke.
Keeping with the sexual assault theme, R. Kelly arrested in Chicago, charged with 10 counts of... what were all the counts here? I'm looking this up here. Underage sex. He's a horrible individual. We never really got around to talking about the surviving R. Kelly shows that were on.
Is now a good time to do that or no?
I mean, we can discuss it a little bit.
Because I watched one episode of it and found that the user interface on the Lifetime Channel's mobile website to be such garbage that I refuse to watch it again.
You know, you can watch that on TV.
You mean on demand and whatnot? I don't want there to be a record on my cable box that, you know, I am, whipping up myself up some donkey sauce and turning the lights off and watching Surviving R. Kelly.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, you know, I did sit through all six episodes. It was very, very disturbing listening to the women that were victims of his and hearing the stories that they told. You know, they all really followed a very similar pattern of, you know, him targeting girls that were, you know, anywhere from 12 to 19 years old. All of them, you know, for the most part, wanting singing careers of their own, and him using the angle that, you know, I can help you, I can train you, I can make you a success. And then, you know, once he would get them over to his house, you know, really working on cutting off that communication between these kids and their parents to the point that, you know, it was almost kidnapping. But, you know, he had a variety of individuals around him that protected him, that enabled him, you know, and, you know, it took a lot of effort for some of these women to escape and get away from him. They actually filmed, you know, one of the girls escaping with help of her mother. And then this girl actually ended up going back to R. Kelly for a period of time before, you know, escaping again. You know, most of them were suffering from Stockholm Syndrome after the period of time. I mean, he would just, you know, he did the classic, you know, pattern of abusers by, you know, making these women fall in love with them and being everything they needed, and then being abusive and, you know, talking down to them and making them feel worthless, and then building them back up again. You know, if you didn't do
that, sounds, that actually sounds like a a co-host of a podcast that I do once a week, the way you just described the verbal abuse immediately followed by emotional lifting only to be followed again by verbal abuse. It sounds very similar to something that I experience on a regular basis.
Well, maybe if you did better, you wouldn't have to get the belt. But anyway, not to make light of this, of course, but yeah, I mean, he would starve some of these women if women didn't ask him to go to the bathroom, get a glass of water, whatever.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was...
Why didn't he... That's disgusting.
He was manipulative to that point. And then, obviously, there was the sexual abuse. There was the degrading of these women by, you know, urinating on them, sharing them with his friends, you know, videotaping them, you know, threatening their families, threatening to release these videotapes. So, you know, as you watch, you know, these six episodes of Surviving R. Kelly, you know, and then eventually he goes to court, you know, on the initial set of charges, I want to say that was in the late 90s, and gets found innocent. Surprisingly enough, because, you know, he tried to, his lawyers basically threw another individual that was part of his crew under the bus and said, oh, well, the person raping these women is this other guy, you know, Tommy, who's part of our stage crew. It's not R. Kelly.
Really?
But now, again, he's been charged again with 10 counts of aggravated criminal sexual abuse. I know Michael Avenatti, who was the lawyer for Stormy Daniels, you know, he is representing two of the victims in this case. I'm hearing that there is another videotape that has surfaced that will be submitted to the courts as well. I think one of the big differences is that there are some physical markings that are unique to R. Kelly as far as tattoos, birthmarks, things of that nature that are now visible on the man in this video that is having sex with underage women. You know, people, you know, one of the things that came out of people looking into this was the Mute R. Kelly campaign. So a lot of the streaming platforms have started to take his music off. It obviously has impacted him financially. He had to post a $100,000 bond after this recent arrest and wasn't able to do it. It actually ended up being a woman who runs a beauty salon in Atlanta that was willing to put up the $100,000 to get R. Kelly out.
What? Why on earth would a woman in Atlanta put up $100,000 on this guy?
There are a number of people that still support R. Kelly and think he is innocent.
I believe I can fly.
And what's the first thing that he does when he gets out on bond?
Goes to Wendy's.
McDonald's, actually.
I know. I just threw it out.
But he goes to a McDonald's where, you know, he has reportedly gone in the past to pick up underage women. So his first condition of bond was to stay away from underage women. And the first thing he does was go somewhere where he could have his picture taken with underage girls.
Yeah, but was it one of the McDonald's that had the ball pit, or was it just a regular McDonald's? Because I think if there's a ball pit, he should have avoided it.
I'm not exactly sure. I would have to look deeper into that for you.
Okay, I would appreciate
sure,
that.
Sure, sure. I'll see what I can do. So yeah, I know technology, nonetheless, you know, go watch the remaining five episodes of Surviving R. Kelly. I think you will be sufficiently disturbed about it.
I'm currently catching up on Game of Thrones.
Oh boy.
I had never watched it. I'm trying to catch up for the last season.
You've only got a little less than 2 months.
I'm about to start season six, so I think I'm in good
shape. One more thing on our agenda here. Brian, have you heard about the Momo Challenge?
Now, is Momo Challenge the one where it's a popular Japanese prank where people run up to unsuspecting girls and jab their fingers in between the butt cheeks of the girls?
I am not familiar with that one. No. So Momo apparently is a sculpture of a grinning figure with dark hair and bulging eyes created by a Japanese special effects company. So it's going around on social media right now. that, you know, children are being encouraged to either disappear for 72 hours or even commit suicide to be able to meet Momo. You know, other messages circulating on social media is compelling youngsters to engage in activities such as taking pills or stabbing other people. This actually first hit the news back in mid-2018 with a report that a 12-year-old Argentinian girl had been motivated by the Momo challenge to hang herself from a tree in her family's backyard. Authorities were never able to confirm that, but you know, she filmed it. She put it up on social media. She had been following the Momo challenge online. They're also stating in August of 2018, the deaths of two young men in India were also tied to that, as well as suicides of a 12-year-old girl and a 16-year-old boy in Barbosa, Colombia. Now it's starting to make its way over to the U.S. Parents in the United States are now being warned to keep an eye on their kids, what they're seeing on YouTube, on kids' YouTube, on the various social media channels about this to make sure that it doesn't gain popularity in the States. Kind of going back to that No Lackin challenge where you would just pull a gun out and see if your friend had a gun.
I'm going to go on record in saying this, and obviously I don't want anybody hurt. There's no need for any of that shit. But if you're stupid enough to kill yourself to try and look like Momo, then, you know, maybe this life just wasn't cut out for you.
Is that so?
Yeah, I'm comfortable with that. And maybe it's the 2.5 ounces of vodka that I've drank in the past 58 minutes. But I'm just going to say this. Maybe you're just not cut from a cloth that's strong enough to withstand what day-to-day life is going to throw your way.
All right. Well, if there are any parents out there that want to learn more about the Momo Challenge and how to deal with it with their children, the National Online Safety website has a guide on there. Go to their website, nationalonlinesafety.com, and you can download a guide, the Momo Guide for Parents, which I may thumb through just for shits and giggles. I'm not quite sure what that must be like. But, yeah, I mean, I feel like I wasn't the brightest kid growing up, but I don't remember ever participating in anything like any of these challenges that we've seen going around.
No, I don't think so. I think you did pretty well.
And yourself, I mean, you didn't do anything that stupid when you were a kid, right?
Not even close. Not even close.
But I, you know, I guess it just shows you that you know, kids are very impressionable, and there are.
But there's a lot of peer pressure, right. And the difference being is that you now have kids that have the ability to connect with other children from faraway places.
Exactly.
You know, when we were kids, you know, if you wanted to meet Momo, you would have to go over to you know, your Uncle Freddy's house. You know, when your parents weren't around. But all joking aside, people, what I'm going to say is just the fact that I don't understand the social pressures that teenagers feel right now. I don't know how, you know, how suddenly feeling like you can make a YouTube video about your Momo challenge or your Instagram, you know, No Lacking video, and how somehow that's going to somehow get you a level of acceptance that's going to make you feel better about yourself. I can't understand it. I can't comprehend it. But please, just leave Momo to Momo.
And keep an eye on your kids. Definitely kids out there need a lot of help, and make sure they're not doing anything crazy.
It's 59 minutes. Do you know where your children
exactly.
are?
Exactly. All right. Well, that's about...
Can I say one thing before we go?
You can. The floor is yours.
Rest in peace, American comedian Brody Stevens.
Yes.
Who passed away this past week. Many people may recognize him. He was in The Hangover. He was in Due Date. He had appeared on Chelsea Lately. He even had, he was good friends with Zach Galifianakis, who produced a Comedy Central reality series called Brody Stevens Enjoy It in 2013. It was, he was a clear example of a manic depressive who had some very wild swings. And the reality show, I watched it when it was originally on, And it, what I felt was, it was very true to manic depression. I felt that he really was willing to let them see his lows. They were willing to see his manic phases. Brody Stevens passes away this past week, committed suicide, hung himself in his apartment in L.A. at the tender age of 49.
He was also apparently close friends with a guy I went to high school with.
Really?
Yes. So.
And what did the guy say?
He was very, very upset, very distraught. And I think, you know, people that, you know, are suffering from this level of depression, you know, that they want to just, you know, exit this world and, you know, get that pain off of them. You know, they can't focus on the people that they're leaving behind. And, you know, and it's a shame because, you know, I mean, Brody was a funny guy. I don't know that he necessarily ever got the credit that maybe was he deserved for his level of talent. And I think a lot of that was due to the fact that, you know, there was a lot of mood swings and a lot of, you know, a lot of people said he wasn't always the easiest person to work with because of it. But when you right. see the people online, you know, commenting on how, you know, people like Patton Oswalt and other, you know, A-list comedians like that talking about how Brody Stevens was the funniest person they ever saw. And then you see the flip side of it, of the pain that his friends are now going through. You know, it's sad. It's sad that, you know, again, I think it all goes back to how we deal with mental illness in this country, and we still need to do a better job at it. That's all I got.
Yeah. If you see somebody hurting, just stay in contact right. with them. Talk to them. You know, let them know that there's somebody to listen to. And ultimately, I don't judge people that commit suicide. I think people have a right to decide that they don't want to do this anymore. But I think that we should make it, I think everybody else should make it overwhelmingly available to them to know that that they have other options, that, you know, to possibly show them the light, that maybe it's not as bad as they see it at that moment. When you're in the bottom of a depression, you don't see a light at the end of the tunnel. And
if you are someone that is dealing with depression, thinking about self-harm, you know, and don't feel you have somebody to reach out to, you can always reach out to the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 1-800-273-TALK, 1-800-273-8255, available 24 hours a day, every day.
Thank you, Ron.
So thanks for ending this on an up note, Brian.
Always.
But go to the Facebook page. We will have the poll up for this week in racism. We'll be looking to collect more suggestions for Drink of the Week. Check out the Instagram page and our Twitter. And, of course, download, rate, review, share us with your friends. Grow this empire that we have built. We want to take over the entire planet, but we need your help to do so. Anything else this week, Brian?
I love you.
I love you more. All right, we're out of here, people. Until next week.